Good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an exciting show for you today. A miracle has happened twice in 1 week. This is a miracle I want to share with all my listening audience. I have had two shows this week, which have been all men. All men. Can you believe it? I have men who are about to talk to us. It happened on, I think, Tuesday. Today, I have three gentlemen who are going to talk to us. At the beginning, they said it never happened. It's all women on the show. They want to talk, but guess what? Get your notepads out. You see, mine is blank right now. It's blank. This is the area where I'm going to add all the notes from the things that I learned from the guests on my show today. And I suggest you get your notepad out as well. But before you get the notepad, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that's to go ahead and share this show because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. Now, you ever wish that you were more like Beyonce? You know how when Beyonce says something and then her
Constantly.
fans don't like it, then the bees go out. I was about to talk about you, Daniel. I said, and then the bees go out and they handle it for Beyonce. I need some Sharifa bees because this my first guest, Daniel Stillman, has just been giving me a hard time for the last 15 minutes. And I got to make sure all the bees handle it. And I wonder why he was talking to me. His company is the Conversation Factory. Good morning, Daniel. How are you?
I'm good, Sharifa. Thanks for having me on.
Now you're
See how well
quieted.
behaved I can be if you... can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. I can. I
Okay,
can hear you
good. I want to
perfectly.
make sure
Stop
my audio
fiddling
is
with
on.
that mic. Focus on me.
Yes,
I
ma'am.
need full attention. Daniel, I gave you a whole floor, the whole
Yes, ma'am.
opening. I made an introduction that people
Oh.
would kill for. Tell us about the
What are you?
Conversation Factory, please.
Oh, well, I mean, so I'm a facilitator and I have a podcast myself where I host people where I try to talk to them about how they design conversations in their work and their lives. And I'm particularly interested in this because I don't know, it's funny. We don't remember learning how to talk. Right? We all learned how to talk, we all learned how to converse, but we do it sort of naturally. But not intentionally. And when you're talking about bringing people together, like you have a plan for this conversation, right? And when we go and we do a keynote or
No,
we want to
I
bring
don't.
together some stakeholders or some leaders together, well, the plan, having no plan is still a plan, right? Being intentionally
True,
underplanned
true.
is intentional. Like Marc Maron, when he does his stand up, he's like, I got some notes, they're on the floor, but I'm going to riff, right? His plan is, I got my notes and then I'm going to get rid of them. Right, that's a plan. When you have an hour and 20 people and you need to make an important decision, facilitators come with a process. Winging it is, sometimes you get lucky, but having a good process, having a good design for the conversation means you can land the plane successfully and nobody gets bruised on the when on the intake or the outflow. And so that's just about designing conversations well. Good stakeholder management, good facilitation, good leadership. You can do it by accident or you can do it by design. And I'm just trying to get people to understand how to do it better and to be more reflective about how they're doing it instead of just winging it. So that's why I've been hosting my podcast for the past couple of years. And I wrote a book called Good Talk, How to Design Conversations That Matter that just landed this month, just to try and give people a handbook on some of the frameworks and tools and perspectives that I've been cobbling together over the last couple of years so that people can just do it on purpose. That's the essence of what I do, is trying to get people to be reflective practitioners.
You're deep. I like that. You're definitely deep.
Thank you.
Daniel.
Well, and I want other people to be deep too, right? Like, why is deep interesting? And I mean, some people are like, I hate small talk. And other people are like, I love small talk. I love getting to know people and hear where they're from. And then they turn small talk into real talk. And that's
Well, I
really
like
important,
that.
right?
Well, can
Being
I take
intentional
that,
that
or
like
is
some
that
people are
already,
like, oh, I hate
do you
small
already
talk. I'm
have
like, you're
that?
just not working hard. Which have which small talk is real talk. You want to write that book? It's a good book.
Introduce our next guest because I don't know what's going on
Yeah,
right
please
now,
do.
but I'm feeling it this morning. Our next guest is Mr. Clay Hildebrand, and he's going to talk to us today about his company, Psychological Associates. Good morning, Clay. How are you?
Sharif, I'm doing great. Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm feeling a little undue pressure since three men is apparently an anomaly. So I hope this goes well. Thank you for having us. Yeah, the company I'm with is Psychological Associates. We've been around for 61 years and we help companies select, develop, and retain their best people. So we are using art and science to help companies make good decisions around hiring, promotion, and we're really creating leaders and creating culture that balance both a striving for success, achievement, with respect for others. And that's something that don't always go, those things don't always go hand in hand, but I think we found a way to make that the way that really helps to retain that talent that companies are looking for. So again, thank you for having us.
You are very welcome. You're very welcome. Clay, let me ask you this. Have you seen an increase in companies trying to adjust or adjust their employees to the psychological or some may consider it traumatic effects of working virtually?
Certainly, you know, a lot of challenges come obviously with having your staff suddenly be no longer co-located. One of the biggest things is that feeling of disconnection. You know, am I still connected to my colleagues, to my company, or to my boss? And we have coached our organizations and our clients to over-communicate and try to create messaging that's very focused and also be very candid. Try to be as transparent as possible because people right now want information. They want to feel like there is a future. They want to feel connected to what's going on. And the best way to do that, again, is we feel just to ramp up that communication and be very straightforward to the degree that you can.
How has this affected your company, if I may ask?
Yeah, no, you feel
was
free.
It an easy
so
transition?
We are an organization. Yes, it turned out to be easier than I think we first thought. We have been out of the office since March 16th. We had always been a company that worked all together in the same place. So it was not our culture to suddenly have people all scattered about town. But everything we do, we've been able to do virtually. So from a business standpoint, we haven't had any disruption. And we have, again, kind of back to what I started with, we have just made a very singular effort to make sure that we're communicating constantly. We are doing multi-week communications with the entire organization. We're doing virtual happy hours and using technology to see and hear each other on a regular basis. So frankly, I think it's gone fairly well, and I've been really pleased with that.
I've been learning a lot of verbiage and new phrases during this time frame, and you snuck one new one in there. What is a virtual happy hour?
Well, so traditionally in the office, once a week, we would get everyone together on a Friday morning, do a huddle, talk about what was going on in the company, and you know, exchange some personal anecdotes. And once a month, we would then spend time together at a normal happy hour. So now every 2 weeks, we all get together on Zoom. I don't know where we'd be without Zoom right now, but we all get together. Everyone comes to the meeting with a drink, whether it's lemonade or their favorite beer or wine, it doesn't matter. And we talk for 60 to 90 minutes together and just socialize and just get caught up. We see each other's children and pets and spouses and just a great way to connect on a regular basis.
Do you feel, you know, because I think the main conversation, right now is the great reopening question. Do you feel that there will be aspects of this transition that you maintain after everything is reopened?
I think it'll be in stages, like so many things. So we have found that because we've been able to deliver client services seamlessly, we're in no big hurry to get back. But I know when we do, we'll probably break it up into an A team and a B team. So things will happen gradually. But I think at first, there'll just be novelty of, hey, I'm face to face again. I'm talking to my colleague or my direct report in a way that I haven't done in months. So it'll take some adjustment, but I don't anticipate it being a problem.
Okay, before we get too much further, I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, make sure that he has enough time, because let me tell you what he did to me, since I told you guys what Daniel did to me. Let me tell you what our next guest did to me. He took a whole lot of my time. I went to his website and I just lost track of time. I was just reading and learning. And I got to talk to this guy because he is the prophet master, Mr. Howard Wolkoff. Good morning, Howard. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for spending time on my website like that. I appreciate it. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, but you know it's interesting.
Can you hear me?
You know, when you get there and you see those big numbers.
Yeah, there's a lot of things for business owners to learn in general, and a lot of things I focus on my website, because business owners have needs. I'm a marketing strategist and business coach, and there are ways to help business owners, not just now with some of the crisis that they're handling, but in general, to help them triple their leads, double their sales, and find immediately $10,000 to $50,000 in their business without them spending additional time on marketing or advertising. And they're just not aware of it. And my goal in life is to share with as many as possible.
So did you say 10 to 50,000?
$10,000 to $50,000 on average.
Without spending an additional dime?
Correct. There's a lot of strategies that can be implemented that people aren't, they may be aware of, but haven't really implemented into their businesses. And once they do, there's money that they've been leaving on the table that they're able to finally collect and make it part of their annual revenues.
So do we have to go to the website? Are you going to give us some ways that, because right now, again, I got to get my notes out, 10 to 50,000.
So, obviously, I'd love for you to go to my website, ProfitMasterBusinessSolutions.com. But yeah, I can share a few of them very easily. But briefly about websites, I believe most companies have a website. I think everyone should have a website in some way or other. But it's really not a digital brochure, and most look at it that way. And some look at it as an expense that they don't want to spend over and over again, so they don't update their website. You'll find a lot of cookie cutter websites and industries that look the same, and people will spend 2 seconds on a website and go to the next one. You need to have a relationship with the person coming to the website immediately if you want to make them a prospect. And I call it the conversion equation, is an interrupt, engage, educate, and offer. And so having a headline and a subheadline on your website, immediately speaking to the conversation going on inside the prospect's mind. There's a need they have, there's a problem they have they don't want, and there's a need that they want and don't have. And if they can be addressed with these two, they're gonna stop and look and listen, and then you can give them a pitch for an offer. And the offer isn't really just to do business with you, but get you onto gathering your email information in trade for a piece of information, something that's a cheat sheet, a checklist, a top 10 list, something that shows value to them enough to provide that email address and shows what you are able to provide to them, and start the process of learning from you and then really start the process of being a prospect. And now you can continue the conversation with them through an email drip campaign. Because if you don't have that, if they came to your website and left after 10 seconds, you have no idea who they are and no way to contact them afterwards.
Okay, so basically when I lost track of time on your website, that was deliberate.
That was deliberate. Obviously, something caught something in your mind, and you spent more time with me, which is very much appreciated. And that's what people should have as a goal when people come to their website.
Too often, though, people will say, my business is here to help people, and it's wonderful, and I'm saving lives, and I'm doing good, and I'm helping businesses. But they don't know how to relay that value to their customers. Do you have any suggestions or recommendations on the best way to do that?
Well, a lot of that is because businesses have, the person who started the business has a real amazing skill and they want to share it with the world. And they go and start a business, but they don't have all the tools necessary to run the business. There's a lot of different hats being worn at the same time. They may not be the marketer or the accountant or the HR person. And so asking for help and getting guidance is really the best way to get to be able to help people more and share with them what you have to offer.
Very interesting. Daniel, I had a question for you. With your podcast, I'm not sure because I haven't checked into it, and different podcasts are different. Is this an interview style podcast? Is this you're sharing information? Is this a group? How does it work on your podcast?
I tend to do one-on-one interviews. I haven't done a group format, and so it's really interesting to see what the pluses and minuses of that are from being on your show. But yeah, I just do one deep dive. Super duper. Occasionally I'll do a solo episode, but mainly it's doing it with one other person, an author, a professional, somebody who I look up to. And I just try to do, you know, like what you're doing with each one of us, like trying to dive deep into what we know and what we understand about our work and our world. And I try to extract some insight from them. And you know, like you, I don't really edit my show much because A, it's a lot of work. I wish that, you know, if you listen to Guy Raz's How I Built This, I don't know if either of you guys listen to that show. It's, you know, if you have a business or you're building a business, it's amazing. They clearly are taking an hour and a half long interview and whittling it down to just the 30 most absolutely interesting minutes. And that takes more interns than I've got right now. but it's,
I don't have any, which is why mine is unedited.
Exactly. But yeah, so it's just the art of the conversation. And speaking of which, I actually want to just like pull some threads together. Cause Howard, like, I really love your perspective on this. And one of the way I look at conversation and designing conversations, like my ears always perk up when anybody uses that word, because I think we think of businesses as, well, I'm here and people will come when they want what I have. Mm-hmm. And then it's a transaction. Well, I'll give them what they want and then they'll give me money and then we're done. And turning it into a relationship, turning it into an ongoing conversation and starting that conversation in a low barrier way. It's like, I mean, this is kind of crass, but it's just like, it's like dating in some ways. Like, it's networking, you know, meeting somebody at a party and shaking their hand and saying, how much do your services cost? And where's your contract? Like, that's skipping way, way far ahead in the conversation. You just shake their hand back when we could shake hands. And you exchange some pleasantries and then you start to build the relationship slowly. And websites, businesses need to be more conversational. I actually have a friend who I coach on this. He coaches salespeople and he took a phrase from my lexicon, designing the conversation. He's like, oh my God, salespeople, they get in front of the room. They've got their PowerPoint deck. And they're just like, here's everything. Here's all the logos of all the companies we serve, you know, and here's all of our services. And then you sit down and say questions. And then at that point, people are half asleep. They're not designing the time that they have with their clients to be a conversation, to understand what they really want and what they really need, and to find out what the connection point between those, the offer and the ask is. And so just designing for a conversation, making sure that it is a conversation, I think is just so important because real conversations wake people up.
It's so key because you want to nurture those relationships. There are some businesses that seem to be just a one transaction and done, and there's others that can be more. And it's much cheaper to nurture that relationship with the current client than it is to go find another one. So finding different ways to communicate without being boring, without being harassing, with too many emails, get creative in the way you do it and communicate. My best experience was I used to be a sales and a marketing director for a local sports radio station. And once a week to the clients, I would send out an email and I would put little clips of highlights of great things that happened over the week from the show. So at the very least, if they missed it during the week, they were entertained with the things that were going on and kept their mind on the radio station. And at an agency that I worked with, we had a client that was a dentist who created these videos using their patients. And it was like a waiting list of patients to be on these videos, and they would do song parodies, lip syncs, and they scripted in costumes and everything, and they jump out, eventually you get the person in the chair singing along, and it was great, and people loved them, and that really kept people focused on that interaction and waiting for more.
Yeah, I'd like to chime in on the whole idea of connecting with the client. Years ago, in one of my first selling jobs, my boss would say, your prospects don't care about you, your product, or your company. And as a young person, I thought, well, what does that leave me with? That really kind of took away those things that I thought I was showing up to talk about. And of course, what he was getting at is they care about how you can solve their problem and how you can demonstrate that you understand what their situation is and you can help them get to something better. Part of our organization, one of the things we do is we really focus on what are the interpersonal skills that can help you connect with a client or a prospect. So many people may have a very similar client, but how does the salesperson, the account manager, the customer service rep connect interpersonally to make sure that they are delivering an experience that the client's looking for? Because building that connection, it's harder to break that connection than it is just to reduce your price to try to get a competitor out of there. So we focus really on the personal side.
Developing that relationship is really the utmost. People will have more problems walking away from a relationship than they will from just a contract. But that relationship can develop more and more contractual opportunities.
Yep.
So Daniel was saying something. I'm sorry, I kept hearing him for some reason. I want to go back to something that you said, Howard, though. You kind of mentioned that particular businesses or particular companies have the ability to do this. And that, is that across the board, or can any business have a conversation? Say my business is I'm selling water bottles, and I know there are millions of water bottles. That's why I always use them as examples, because people always ask me, Sharifa, I'm on it. Thank you, Clay, for my proof during the thing, because people will come to me and they will say, Sharifa, I want to start a business, but the market is so saturated. And I will say, look, go to any grocery store, walk down the bottled water aisle. There are a million different types of bottled water. So it's water at the end of the day. But what's going to make your water better, different, more special than any other company? But do you look at it and say, okay, well, maybe that product doesn't have a story that they need to tell. It's just a product. If that was a long-winded question, Howard, I know.
And which is fine, and I definitely understand where you're going with it. It's you want to have the story. The product may not be that exciting, but you as the company, you want to figure out what your story is and keep on telling it, and in an entertaining way. Again, if you're just sending me a email every week with here's the specials going on, I'm eventually either not going to open it or I'm going to get myself off the list. But if you find some way to connect to people within an email or in using video is so important. You need to figure out how to use video in one way or another. And some of the greatest ways of doing it is not just you. I don't have to be the spokesperson. Get the other employees involved in the process. Honey Bunches of Oats commercials blew up because they used people that worked on the assembly line.
And that's one lady
they fell in love with.
Yes.
And she left the company and she still was doing the commercials because everyone identified with her. The Snapple lady was, Snapple was just a drink, but they created a persona and that helped them with creating a relationship with their customers. And there are so many different ways to create relationship with the customers, whether it's even with a podcast or just how you're presenting yourself.
Go ahead. Well, I just like, cause I want to unpack this a little bit. Cause I think there's a way to how, and this is, I'm not criticizing you whatsoever, Howard. I think you're right. There are so many different ways to do it, but I always like to get people to think strategically about it. And like a couple of strategies, when you think about how a story is constructed, a story is really a conversation, right? Mm-hmm. There's a relationship between what's being sent. There's messages sent, there's messages received, and then there's a response. And not all stories are interactive. Where they're trying to do that now, it's weird. But when you look at a good story, you can draw out the arc of that story. And this is a classic design thinking tool, the journey map, right? And every great writer actually maps out their stories. And so you have the rising action and the falling action. And you don't want to have a story that's just this happens and 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 this happens. And that's what you're talking about with the email, where it's like every week it's the same, like, here's what we're selling, here's 10% off. People just get numb to that because it's the same thing every time. Right? Great stories have ebbs and flows. They have peaks and valleys. They rise and fall. And the story of your product, of your company, or the challenge that your client is facing as well, like, there needs to be that aha moment. There needs to be the tension, and there needs to be the release. And so I think there's some fundamental components of creating tension and creating drama, creating dynamics, and taking that story and either stretching it out or compressing it, that are just universal, right? And I don't think the water has to have a story. It can have a benefit, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't have to be about giving water to people who don't have any, right? Mm-hmm. Which is what some water sells themselves on. Like, oh, if you buy our water, we'll give water to other people, right? Or you could buy our water, right? Or you buy our water and it's cheaper, or you buy our water and it has CBD in it, right? So there's benefits to it. And so I think it's just about thinking strategically and methodically about these things.
I know, but I just
clearly do.
I know, but I just, okay. I want to go back to my question. That was wonderful. It was beautiful. I love looking at different sides of discussion, but specifically what I was trying to phrase is people are always looking for that magic that turns it into that, the lady with the cereal. It's like everybody wants to create that magic. And people ask me that all the time. I'm like, I don't know. That's why it's magic. You don't know. I don't think anyone really knew that she would take off like that. Now, I'll give you another example that's more popular, but look at Flo from Progressive. Like, Flo is a celebrity from doing insurance commercials. One of the things that I talk about is the pet rock sold. When you can take a rock, now this rock didn't do, I know I'm not the only one who remembers the pet rock, right?
Sure. You also have to remember there were only 3 television stations at that time. So people need other things to entertain themselves. So there was an opportunity that the pet rock designer saw.
Yes.
And so also we don't talk about the other, you know, the other things that they tried that didn't succeed.
Like what?
I think we really straw. Have, what's that, I'm sorry?
Talking straw, that didn't go over well.
Right. We definitely have, there's a success bias. I actually don't know the name of the cognitive bias that I'm trying to think of, but it's like the inverse of the black swan. Mm-hmm. You know, we notice things that spring out to us. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure, pretty sure Progressive ran lots of other ads that we don't talk about.
But right? I think what Progressive and Geico and all these other commercials that we recognize have done is they've reacted to something Howard just mentioned, and that is we have more choices today than we ever had in the past. And even the invention and the distribution of the remote control. I know as a kid growing up, I may be the oldest one on the panel, but you know, when I grew up, if I was sitting on the couch and a commercial came on that I didn't enjoy, was it worth my getting up, walking over to the TV and changing the channel to avoid that 30 to 60 second obnoxious spiel? Probably not. I probably just sat through it and thought of something else. But as soon as people had the opportunity to flip 30, 40, 100 channels away, they had to do things differently and communicate in a way that is engaging but still gets the message across. And I think we see that today versus what we may have seen in the past.
Right. So Clay, that was beautiful. That was when Clay speaks, all of a sudden, like I heard the angels sing. Like it just click. But then the question,
the wisdom of the ages, that's what Clay is delivering. Time-tested wisdom.
Next I'll tell a story
on your show, Daniel. I missed that. I'm sorry.
I said, next I'll tell a story about, you know, when cars were invented or something else I experienced. But yes, go ahead.
You did not experience that. Stop it. But what I was going to say, you're trying to make me lose my thought this morning, Clay. But the people, what I want to know then, and the people watching then, is the how. Everybody always wants to know the how. How do you create that magic? How do you do that? Because we have so many different choices. That's the one, number one thing in this day and age, especially during this global pandemic that everyone is dealing with. People are home watching, just hungry for content. They need more and more and more and more and more and more content, whether it's Netflix, Facebook. I saw something the other day that before all this, people were on Facebook an average of 2 hours a day. Now they're on Facebook an average of 8 hours a day. That's what I read. I don't, you know if that's true or not, but I do a lot of research just so I can ask you guys, you know, what do you think about that? You know, so how do you get them to be the one that you focus on or stay with?
Wait, so
now we lost you.
Oh, look at that. How did I, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm getting weird messages about unmuting my speaker.
That wasn't me.
So I want to hear what everyone else has to say about this, but I have a really strong opinion about this, which is that, I think it keeps asking, it keeps changing my speakers to various things. I don't know. Zoom's being a little bit of a twerp today. When people say, how do I do it? And they look for other examples of how to do it. I know that businesses are always hungry and entrepreneurs are always hungry for, like, I want the formula and I want the recipe.
Yes.
But what I constantly tell people is the recipe does not make the chef. And
ooh, say that again. Wait, no, you got to say that again, Daniel. Take me a minute. You got to say it again.
The recipe doesn't make the chef.
Okay.
Right. And so one of my favorite books, it's called The Inner Game of Tennis. It's, I don't know if anybody here has read it. It's a book about coaching that's also about tennis, and it's about mindfulness. And one of the things that they talk about is that some of the tennis greats, and I'm not a huge tennis fan, but what they talk about is that some of the... what is going on? I don't know if it's me or the internet or whatever. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great. Pete Sampras's serve was unconventional, right? If his coach was like, no, that's not how it's done. You're not doing it how the greats do it. You have to serve how the greats serve. This is how the greats serve. His serve would have never been invented. And now his serve is what people get coached on. And so what I tell people is, screw the recipe. Make your own. Try something else. Try 10 things. Right? Like, yes, try some of the great recipes, learn beurre blanc, know how to make a béarnaise sauce, but then just try some other things and see what sticks on the wall, because nobody knows your customer the way you know your customer, and nobody will know what will work until you try it. And until you start the conversation and get the feedback loop going, right? Waiting for the perfect recipe, I think, is just an excuse for non-action.
The recipe is also not going to just come to you or come to mind. A lot of these campaigns that we're talking about right now are well-funded. There's lots of money spent on commercials and lots more money spent on the ad spends to get them in front of the eyeballs to remember them. Yeah. So the smaller companies aren't going to have that, and you have to get creative in what you're doing. I think going back to something you said before, it really all starts with strategy. It's, yeah, you can sit there and throw things up on a wall in a meeting and see what sticks. But my basic strategy on marketing is you have to market the way your prospects want to be marketed to. And unfortunately, that's a very broad answer. But there's a lot of different things you can do specifically to reach different demos. But at least, first of all, you need to know who your market is. Who is your customer? And if you're now, you know your customer is 20 to 35, you're not going to create a campaign for 60-year-olds or 18-year-olds. And that starts to really pull things away from the curtain. And then you can look directly to figure out what is going to speak to them that will get them excited. So going back to the water, let's start with A. If you're jumping into a market that is really, really saturated, all the power to you. I think you're in for a bumpy road. But if you find people that like what you are providing, speak to them and get their feedback of why they like it. And now you're going to learn more why other people like them may like it. And that starts to create what your messaging needs to be.
And really, Howard, you're talking about empathy and curiosity, right? And there's almost no substitute for that.
Playa, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. You know, using, again, your water example, if a friend of mine said they were thinking about entering that market, my first question would be, what is it that's going to be different about your product or your service? Maybe it's not, maybe the water is identical, but it's how you package it or how you're going to deliver it. Maybe you're going to provide water on the porch every morning. I mean, having something that's unique in a saturated market, I think, is so key. The other thing, and I'll take it down to more of a one-on-one level, one of the things we talk a lot about, and Daniel, I think you'll appreciate this because it goes back to conversations, and that is we have a five-step format that is meant to have a difficult conversation made easier. And step one is just determining receptivity, because if the person is not in a place to receive the message, you're wasting your time. But step two, which is typically the step people struggle the most with, is also the longest step, and it's just asking good questions. And then actually listening, not listening to respond, but listening to understand. And that sounds simple, it sounds intuitive, but it isn't common. And I think if you're talking to a single prospect or you're looking at the entire market, ask good questions and learn from what you hear.
Yeah, I love that, Clay. And that goes to like the weird subtle point in my book that I'm trying to get people to understand, which is that all conversations are built out of the same material. You know, the conversation that you're trying to have with somebody who's, that's, you know, it's difficult and you want to try to clear the air is not fundamentally different from the conversation Howard is recommending people have with their customers of finding out if they're receptive, finding out what they really need, and what they really want, and then asking them real questions, and then getting really listening to hear, not necessarily just to extract, right? And that's fundamentally true.
When does your book come out again?
It's out. It's real. It's on the places that you can buy books.
You have a copy on Amazon,
right? Not at hand right now. It's in the other room. This is my recording room, which is Tom's book.
A copy of the cover. Give us the title again, please.
I can share my screen. It's called Good Talk: How to Design Conversations That Matter.
Yes, I want to see what's on your screen.
You want to see what's you? I can show you. Here, I'll share my screen. Here you go. I was just editing a presentation that, not surprisingly, had my book in it, as one must. You know, share screen. There it is. Oh, the host has disabled screen participation, so I can't.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. You're
okay. Wait. I'm good. There you go. You should be fine.
There you go. Cool. There you go. We worked long and hard on that cover there. the book's about these nine elements of conversations, people, invitation, power, and permission, the cadence or rhythm of a conversation, the interface, the space the conversation happens in. I think like Howard, like when you're talking about that downloadable thing on your website, that's so many things. Like that PDF becomes an interface for the conversation, and you're also getting permission to start emailing people. And then can you find a cadence or a rhythm of communicating with them that actually gets them to continue to be receptive to that message? And can people actually reply to it? Is it just you who gets to talk, or is there turn taking? You know, I get these emails all the time where it sounds like somebody's talking to me, but I know if I reply to it, there's nobody on the other end who's really listening. And so that's really has to.
What's error and repair.
What's that?
What is error and repair?
Well, so the easiest way to think about, like, actually Clay talked about it too, right? Mistakes happen in a conversation, and rather than trying to pretend that they won't, planning for them as early as possible is ideal. And so in a meeting or a workshop where I first learned how to do this stuff, it was like putting up a parking lot. You know, here's the parking lot. If anybody wants to bring up a topic that we deem outside of our goals and our agreements, then it's going to go into the parking lot. But if we, you know, Sharifa, you and I, when we're talking in real life and we talk online, this happens all the time, we talk at the same time.
Yes.
Our turns collide in midair. And then one of us says, oh, I'm sorry, you go ahead. Oh, no, you go ahead. No, you go ahead. Right. So we're both polite and we're trying to be collaborative, because conversations, you know, in person are, we try to make them collaborative and constructive. And so it's really, really easy to both notice and fix those errors, but like other errors are so much harder to see, right? This is one of the challenges of most relationships, is misinterpreting what somebody intends, right? You know, why did you do it that way? Or like, oh, that's not what I meant to say. Oh, well, what did you mean to say? Right? We hear in people's speech what we want to hear sometimes, not always what they intend. And that's why Clay's five steps are, you know, I'm willing to guess that one of them is trying to understand what the person meant to say.
It certainly is. It's making sure that you're having agreement. And if not, going back and finding out where you don't.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's people don't actually recount a whole conversation. They recount the narrative thread that they've connected, and we're each telling our own story about what's happening. Right. And so making sure that we're having a shared story is really, really critical.
I want to go back to something. I agree. Yeah. And I loved your presentation. And I love, you know, not to, but I love the roundtable talk show, because that's the first time I've done the screen presentations. Not that I didn't know that I had the ability or that Zoom had the ability, but
you do.
I just wanted to see a cover of the book, and then you just started with this.
Sorry, it was just right there. I apologize.
No, it was beautiful. No, Daniel, no apology was necessary, because I enjoyed it. I learned it, and it was like, that's why I love how everything is organic.
And I'm glad it clearly resonated. I mean, it's like Howard and Clay, like, it's interesting. We're all here on this call. Like, mm-hmm. We all are conversation designers in different contexts. Mm-hmm. And so it's great to hear different parts of it resonate with you all, because that's what it's for, is for people to be thoughtful with.
Yes. Did it resonate with you, Howard?
Oh, absolutely. And I love the way it was all broken out and broken down, because there are so many different aspects of the conversation. And I laughed before, I was talking about the salesperson doing the big presentation, not knowing how to communicate with anybody. There's so many people that have the opportunities to communicate and don't take advantage of them, because they really don't know how to measure themselves and how to get a better understanding of the response that they're getting from people, and tie all those pieces together in the right way to be successful.
Hmm. What were your thoughts, Clay?
Yeah, I agree with all of this, and not to fall into a cliche, but I think it's hard to have this conversation and not start thinking about how this translates into email and texting, because so much of our conversations nowadays are not verbal. So you can't pick up on tone. And to Daniel's point about meaning getting lost, boy, we've all, I'm sure, been part of a email exchange where you completely misunderstood what the person was getting at, and that can go horribly wrong. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious as to what Howard and Daniel have done or recommended to address that piece of it.
Oh boy.
Yeah, yeah.
That never happens to me, actually, Clay. I'm always surprised.
I remember some doozies from the past, but you have to have, again, be more creative with things. A lot of times if I'm responding to things on Facebook, and I involve myself in groups a lot, I'll respond with GIFs, because you can, the picture tells a thousand words situation. Some of it is the ones that you see all the time, and some is I've been able to create my own and use myself doing a thumbs up or other things in reaction. And this way you can get away from the words that may, when you're trying to put something simple in, it may then turn into something else. You hit it home with the image, and email is now, you're able to put images and videos into it a lot more. I have a product I use called BombBomb that I can create a video inside the email, and they can watch the email. They can even respond back to me by video if they wanted to.
To see how emojis have like leaked into business emails, because it is really hard to communicate sarcasm. But I think this goes to just like keeping your communications as simple as possible. It's really crazy to me how sometimes like I will need to make a 4-sentence email, and it takes me like 10-15 minutes to just craft it. And then I have to say to my fiance, I'm like, Jenna, can you read these 4 sentences and tell me if I have successfully removed all of the bile in it, because I'm really annoyed with this person and I want to communicate clearly without escalating the situation.
Yeah, Dan,
no, I think that's clean. That sounds clean to me. And I'm like, oh, thank God.
I completely support the idea of reading it and having someone else read it. The other thing I learned a long time ago is remove the addresses in the to line so that if you accidentally hit send early, right. It doesn't go. So
Google lets you unsend right now. It's a lifesaver.
Right.
But you can miss that opportunity.
Exactly. I just leave the names out until I'm 100% comfortable with the message.
That is deep, deep, hard-earned wisdom, Clay.
Speaking right there.
Yeah, that wisdom is the pain of that's age. The pain of experience speaking.
That's right.
Yeah, I love to hear that story, Clay.
Well, this is a minor example, but I did one time ask a client to iron my shirts because I was going on a business trip. Fortunately, she had a great attitude. She said, "I don't even do that for my husband, much less for you." And I realized it was not meant to go to her. So
see, that's error and repair, right?
Yes. Like, right.
There you go.
There's two main strategies, and if you've never seen Key and Peele, this is a great video of the text message confusion, where they're having a text message exchange and one of them thinks that they're going to have a fight and the other one's just totally chilled out. And your client could have been angry about it, like, and it's such a small error, and there are still some people who are walking around with a hair trigger. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's great that she was easygoing about it, but the flip side is a lot of people are way too easygoing about everything, and they should be setting more boundaries when people cross their boundaries. This is definitely not one of those situations. I think she responded appropriately, and she's humor. Humor is an amazing repair strategy.
Yep.
Humor is maybe one of the best repair strategies. Oh, well, that didn't work. That's what I do when I tell a joke and it doesn't go over well. I say, well, that didn't go over well, and then everyone laughs. Even if I tell a bad joke, people laugh about it because I make them laugh at me. That's how I repair the break. It's very
the only time the one time I think humor can be a little bit dangerous or tricky, maybe that's a better word, is if you're communicating with someone from a completely different culture. So yes. If you're doing international emails, sometimes one humor is completely misunderstood in another culture.
Oh yes.
Very true.
It doesn't even have to be humor. One of the things that I've learned, because I started working with people in other countries who helped me with websites and all kinds of stuff, a lot that you can get in other countries, by the way. I learned that the nuances of American lingo can be missed in some of the conversations. So I have learned to be as crystal clear as possible on the instructions and designs and directions I give people, because sometimes they simply don't understand what our jargon means. And one of the things that I've learned is that Americans use a lot more jargon than anywhere else in the world. Like we love little cute, witty things.
Well, all of our sports comments, you know, we're really going to hit a home run, or boy, all those things, when you're writing for an international audience, you've got to go through with a fine tooth comb, because you will find so many things in there that won't translate elsewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things you mentioned though, Clay, is, and I love your five steps, your five aspects, and I'm taking note of them. But number one, I want to ask you briefly about the whole receptivity aspect. I think that's wonderful. And to me, and I'm just curious, but it's one of those things that sounds good. I'm one of those people that I don't like telemarketers. I don't care what you're selling, what you're offering. I don't even know what you're calling for. Once I hear that tone in your voice that tells me you're a telemarketer, I'm hanging up. But in retrospect, in sales, I'm that person that's like, no, they're going to buy what I'm selling. They're going to get it. I don't look at whether or not the person is receptive. I ignore all that. I look at they're going to be receptive. And sometimes what I have found is that people who appear not to be receptive are because they don't want to hear it. They, you know, but then when you kind of give them a little bit more information, they'll be like, oh, okay, I thought you were trying to sell me this or sell me that. And then the conversation begins. But I found that sometimes people just say, oh, they're not receptive, and they give up. And that could have been an opportunity for them to connect with the customer. Does that make sense?
It does. And I should couch the answer with much of what we do with that five-step format is around leadership conversations, not just selling. So for example, we help a lot of leaders talk to maybe a direct report who the individual thought they were getting a promotion or a raise, and now it's your job to tell them they're not. So, you know, we teach, first of all, just starting that conversation using appropriate sociability. So some people ease into that conversation with a 20-minute story about their, you know, their weekend, mm-hmm. and the message gets lost. Other people dive in like tearing off a Band-Aid. We talk about, understand what the interpersonal skills are that can get that conversation started appropriately, but ask, come right out and ask and say, is this a good time to talk? And then introduce the topic. Because again, if you don't have that person's mind share, or if they're distracted, or if you could tell they're not ready to hear that message, it'd be much better to start another time than get into a bad conversation.
And I definitely agree. One of the things that I used to say, I used to work in this large call center, and people were always getting let go. And they would say, you know, you had me come all the way in here to let me go. You could have called me and sent me my check, but now you didn't make me get up, get ready for work, go into work. I'm sitting at my desk thinking I got a full day, and now I don't even have a job. So, hey, those are the conversations we have to have sometimes.
Yep.
Well, Clay, what I love about that, the invitation into the conversation of, is this a good time to talk? You know, it's a great question. And also just the other, this Goldilocks principle that people always want the way, but you're just giving us the edges, which is helpful. It's like, on one hand, I obviously shouldn't be doing 20 minutes of a monologue about my weekend, and I shouldn't be like, okay, so you're fired. Do you have any questions? And while, you know, on one hand, people are like, how much small talk should I have, Clay? This is tell me exactly. And this is what I find troublesome. And this is, it's hard to coach some people sometimes when it's like, well exactly how many minutes of small talk should I do? It's like, well, you know, shoot for 2.3 minutes. Research has shown that, but I think that takes all the humanity out of it. Because you gotta feel what's happening.
And I'll take the opportunity to do my blatant plug. And then I feel like we got to get Howard back in the conversation. But one of the things Psychological Associates teaches, we have our own intellectual property called the Q4 model. And we teach people, first of all, where do they fall on that model in terms of behavior? So we first teach self-awareness. It's very hard to improve your situation with others until you understand how you're coming across. But once you have that self-awareness, we teach them to identify, what's the personal style of the person I'm speaking to? Some people want to get to the point. So that 20-minute conversation around the weekend would be completely wasted. Other people need to be, you know, ease in more than some. So it's all about understanding, what does this person need? How am I coming across? And now how do I connect those dots? So that's something we teach in a seminar.
No, we were getting Howard back in the conversation, because I had a lot to say about what Daniel had to say, because I think, Daniel, I need you to help me change my life. Like, can you be my Ayala saying change my life? Because I mean, you guys had no idea. Like, I'm sitting over here literally laughing out loud, because I'm that ladder. I'm the one, you're fired. Like, there's no, you know, chaser.
Listen, if it's working for you, that's
fine. Not necessarily, I think people working, come
to
though.
People, well, exactly. This is why people come to Clay, and people come to me, and why people come to Howard if nobody even knows they have a problem, and people are just like, look, if you're Mark Cuban, no, you're not coming. I mean, actually, I take that back. He probably has a leadership coach. Like, I almost guarantee he's got a business coach, and he has a leadership coach. Everybody needs a coach. That's a direct quote from Bill Gates. That's one of you'll find that on a lot of people's pages, coaching websites. Everyone needs a coach. Bill Gates. Eric Schneider said a similar, but no, but it's like, you, self-awareness does not come for free, right? Most people, when they look at their website, Howard, I'm sure they're like, all right, done, box checked, versus exactly. Realizing that their business is an ongoing conversation with the world that they need to constantly be pruning and evolving.
Howard, save us.
Yeah, please. Fix our problems.
Save our the world one business at a time. It is important to be able to say to yourself, I need help and I want to learn, and learning is something that goes on for your entire life, and you should always be learning something, and helping someone guide you through this is really important, especially now, because people are trying to figure out, where's my revenue coming from? Some companies have not had revenue in the last 2 months. So you need to figure out, you need to re-strategize what you do, hoping that the last couple of months people really looked at all the different pieces of what they do and how they communicate. And this was a great time to kind of reboot the entire system in your pricing and your items. Take the McDonald's approach. Do you have items that you can bring to the table when you're about to do that sale or that contract? And can you supersize it? Can you add fries to that? Upselling and cross-selling in your marketing and knowing what products you have can generate dollars that you never even thought existed before. 34% of the time, if someone is asked, given an offer for an upsell or cross-sell, they're going to say yes. That's a third of the time that money is just left on the table. And looking at your relationships of people that have the same customer as you, you can create joint ventures with them and generate revenue from that. Everyone gives 10% back if a contract is written up when the lead is passed on. If you have the right industry that you can make a chain and people are passing leads back and forth, like for weddings, and all the different vendors know each other and they're passing back and forth, everyone is making money in so many different ways. So it's you have to be strategic and you have to be able to look at yourself and say, I'm a person that can ask questions, and it's okay if my feelings are hurt in the process. I want to learn more and I want to better my business. I want to better it for the people that work for me and the people that I am serving.
Yes. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show, and I truly enjoy myself. This was a lot of fun. You guys are great conversationalists. Now, what I like to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who's watching live, as well as everyone who's watching in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. So we're going to go ahead and start with you, Daniel.
Oh, well, I mean, not surprisingly, like it's a sad thing that this is what authors must do. But writing a book is a terrible, terrible experience. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. And I'm just now starting to get some friends who are reading it. I'm seeing the reviews come on Amazon, and it's really hard to look at them even when they're positive. Because I really believe in the book. I really believe in the book's message. And so people can go to theconversationfactory.com and download the first two free chapters. And if they like the rest of it, they can get the book. And if they don't, then hopefully they'll have learned something from those first two chapters that make their conversations and their communications and at work and at home better. So that's my, that's what I'd love for people to do, is just start designing their conversations more thoughtfully. And hopefully the first couple of chapters of Good Talk can help you do it a little bit better and make the world a slightly better place, which is the real goal.
Why are the positive reviews hard for you to look at?
Well, you know, I don't know if anybody else suffers from mild to severe imposter syndrome.
I do. Severe.
Yes. Ask your doctor if
blank. You're my doctor you. Now.
Right. It's having a part of one's brain, having the work of my heart and soul in the world for people to poke at, it's vulnerable, right? It's not like I went to some book in a box shop and just said, you know, talked at them for a couple hours and they made a book. I drew all the pictures in the book. It took me 2 years to write the book. There's been multiple edits. It's a work of love. You know, when you make a cake in an afternoon and somebody eats it and says, that's great. You're like, thanks. So this is something I've worked hard on. And so when somebody says they like it, it's actually really hard because they're like, is it the best I could have done? Could it have been better? Probably. So it's the best book I was capable of doing. And so when people say they like it, it's like, okay, thanks for saying that, which is not the same thing as saying thank you.
Oh, that was so beautiful. You're funny, but you have a warm heart. I think we're sarcastic. We're a lot alike. I like you. I'm gonna go hang out on your podcast if you allow me. No, I need to set a time and a date. You know what I mean? Because I want to talk to you a little bit more. But give us the name of your book again, please.
It's Good Talk: How to Design Conversations That Matter. And the website's The Conversation Factory. You can download two free chapters from there.
Okay, I'm definitely going to check it out. Clay, what do you have for us?
Well, I don't know if I'll be as eloquent as Daniel was in my answer. I may sound a bit more crass, but if your listeners did one thing, I guess I'd want them to be thinking about what's going to change between now and whenever things get back to semi-normal and hopefully almost all the way normal. But I think the things that won't change good leadership is still going to be critical, if not more important. How we communicate with one another, I think, is even more important than it used to be. And what type of culture do you want your organization to have coming out of this that will make people want to stick around? Because at some point, people are going to have choices again. They may not today, but they will at some point. So I would just love people to visit our website, which is q4solutions.com. Take a look at some of our webinars. We try to put one out a week that just gives information. It's not a hard sell by any stretch. Take a look at some of our behavioral models. And if it resonates, give me a call. We would love to speak to you about that.
Thank you, Howard.
All right. Thank you very much for having me. This was a lot of fun. This was really, really one of the best hours I've spent in a long time. So I appreciate all of you for this. Again, as I mentioned, I work with small business owners and small businesses to, especially now with people who are feeling a lot of pain. Let me spend some 45 minutes with you, at least on a Zoom. I can find ways to triple your leads, double your sales, and find $10,000 to $50,000 in your business without you spending additional time in marketing or advertising. If you go to my website, ProfitMasterBusinessSolutions.com, you can have an opportunity to download my ebook, which starts to go into these strategies and more, 4 to 5 minute business breakthroughs. And I'd really love to have the conversation with you.
Okay, but Howard, I'm gonna call you. I need some Ashery for leads to get more people on the Roundtable Talk Show. I don't want you booked. See, let me tell you my biggest problem. This is what I'm going to tell the audience. I bring all these wonderful people on the show, and then when I try to call them, they've all booked up because everybody in the audience is taking all the time slots. Are you still going to have time for me, Howard?
I'm going to absolutely have tons of time for you.
Thank you. Thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who's watching it in the archives. If you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at ashreaper.com. Until tomorrow, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.